Senator,
Mr. President, Senator Parker-Miller, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Mark Wegener from the Woodlake Lutheran Church in Richfield.
Brothers and sisters, some 2,500 years ago, the ancient psalmist put it this way: the earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, the world and those who dwell therein. With that in mind, let us pray. Eternal God, your mercies come to us new every day. We give you thanks for all the blessings we enjoy, the bountiful resources of this rich land, the wealth of mind and soul, of talent and industry, the riches of freedom and opportunity in these United States. Indeed, we give you thanks. We confess to you, therefore, our misuse of your gifts, the ways we have wasted or abused our resources, the times we have isolated ourselves from each other, the moments of fear when we have given in to anger. Indeed, we plead for your mercy. So we pray for the inspiration and power of your Spirit, that we may learn to trust your promise of abundance, that we may live with hope for the future, that we may join together within a fellowship which will work for the common good of all our people. Indeed, we pray for your continued goodness. Now let your Spirit inspire us today as together we deliberate and meet and caucus and vote on behalf of the citizens of this state, that our words may be edifying, that our demeanor may be charitable, that our actions may be just and fair. For the sake of your holy name, amen.
Amen. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cullen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Youngbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Hortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stump, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger. Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. The next first order of business is executive and official communications. Senator Pogemiller. Printed on today's agenda.
Mr. President, I'd move to lay them on the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file herewith returned. Senate file number 736. And also, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House file numbers 230, 448, 1008, and 878. Signed, Albany Mathis, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives. And also 539.
Next order of business, first reading of House bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, they will be referred to the committees as indicated. First reading. Next order of business is reports of committees. Senator Corey.
Mr. President, under Rule 21, I object to the reference of Senate File 1085. That will
just be This bill will go automatically to the Rules Committee.
Does he adopt the other ones?
Now, Senator Pogemiller, you can adopt.
Mr. President, I move that the remaining committee reports printed in today's agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. The sixth order of business is second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Second reading. There are next order of business motions and resolutions. There are a number of authors' motions. Without objection, we will take those as one motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Higgins, did you have a motion? And Dibbles?
Thanks, Mr. President. I move that Senate File 971, number 10 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Do you vouch for them?
Excuse me, this one is not printed on today's agenda.
How many are there?
Senator Higgins, do you have approval of the committee chairs on this one?
Mr. Chair, I'm doing this because I got a letter from the division chair saying I had to send it back.
All right. On the Higgins motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Higgins, you have one printed on today's agenda, Senate file number 1709. You're moving the bill from the Committee on Health and Housing and Family Security and re-referring it to the Committee on Finance. Is that correct? Is that your motion? Want to make that motion?
I'll make that motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Dibble, did you have a motion to make?
Yes, Mr. President. Thank you. I move that Senate File 1673 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to the Committee on Education.
Senator Dibble, did you talk to the chairs of the respective committees, and they agree?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I've spoken with both committee chairs. This is a bill having to do with bus service.
All right. On the Dibble motion to refer the bill, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. There are two resolutions on today's agenda. Without objection, they will be sent to the Rules Committee. I think so, yeah. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I would move that we take up general orders.
We want to do Senator Moi on the notaries first.
I'll withdraw that motion.
Senator Moi.
I thought she'd be a little quicker on the uptake.
Mr. Chair, I move that the appointments of notaries public received March 15, 2007 be taken from the table.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. 2-1.
Mr. Chair, I move that the Senate do now consent to and confirm the appointments of the notaries public.
Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that Senate file 1814 be withdrawn from the Finance Committee and re-referred to the Education Committee.
We're still on motions. Would you explain what you're doing here?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, this is a bill, my bill. And
Senator Hatt.
Sorry, Mr. President. This is a bill that I've introduced. It's been referred to the Finance Committee. I've talked with Senator Cohen and Senator Wieger, and they're both agreeable to having it re-referred to the Education Committee.
Yeah, we don't have it at the desk, and can we do it later? We don't have the bill here. We're going to have it in an addendum a little later. And why don't we do it then? Then we'll get the bill up here and...
All right, thank you.
We'll get it done today.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I'd move that we take up general orders.
On the motion... stayed on motion resolutions.
Mr. President, I'm sorry. I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole for the purpose of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
And then, Mr. President, I would suggest that we start with number one. That's the Met Council, elected Met Council bill, and then do 3, 4, and 5 if we have time. We'll try to finish by noon or so. So number one, and then potentially 3, 4, and 5.
The first bill being considered on the Senate General Orders this morning will be Senate File 81, Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 81 be recommended to pass.
Senator Wieger, on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 81 calls for an elected Metropolitan Council. 40 years ago, the Minnesota legislature passed legislation to create this body. Overall, it's the 7-county form of regional government. Powers which are derived from the legislature include transportation, transit, parks and open space, land planning. Many other areas have been addressed over the years, ranging from criminal justice to health care. It is clearly beyond a single purpose district and has a number of areas that affect everyone's lives in the metropolitan area.
Okay. Personally, and I believe a lot of people here consider this a very important bill, so let's go to the back
Mr.
room or somewhere. We want to hear this explanation. Senator Pogramiller.
Mr. President, I think there may be more staff people on the floor than are necessary. So I request any staff person that doesn't
from up
need
here,
to
you can see a lot of that. And let's quiet down or we're going to use the sergeants. All right. Try again, Senator Wieger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. What the bill does not do is change the power that is already in statute for the Metropolitan Council. What it does do is empower the people of the metropolitan area to elect a council. This issue has been before the body in the past, 40 years ago when the council was created. In fact, 10 years ago, or 11, it passed as well, but it was vetoed. It's all about power to the people. It's as simple as that. The provisions for an election would be as follows. 16 members would be elected. They would appoint their chair. The districts would be redrawn in 2012. The election would be nonpartisan. Members would be eligible for up to $20,000 in the state program that we have now for legislators and other type candidates that are able to apply in that program. But the funding for that would come through the Metropolitan Council. But public financing would be available if they met the threshold in getting contributions of up to $2,500. The contributors, though, would not be eligible for a refund, so there would be no state impact on the state budget. The bottom line is this. If you support the right of the people to elect their government, you're for it. If you feel that there is accountability now by having members of the council appointed by the governor, then you're satisfied. I'm not bringing this bill because I'm dissatisfied with the chair of the Met Council, Peter Bell. I think he does a great job. And I'll also say I voted for him as a region candidate. There's been some discussion that that because we have a Republican governor, it's wrong. I supported this change when I was a Metropolitan Council member myself back in the 1980s, appointed by a Democratic governor. I believe, members, it's very partisan, the process right now through the appointment process. and would urge that we have a process where the public would have a direct voice in who represents them. I have a handout. Former Senator Myron Orfield provided very eloquent testimony showing the tax impact, the bonded indebtedness impact of the council. I'm sure we would all stipulate that it's a powerful governmental entity, perhaps the most powerful governmental entity in Minnesota outside of our own legislative body. Mr. Chair, I'll stand for any questions.
Senator Robley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I rise in opposition to Senator Wieger's bill. I know that over the years there's been a lot of debate and discussion about this, but members, I think the regional government was formed to have a regional impact. And if we break it down into elected seats, seats that are 2.5 times larger than each of our Senate districts, we are going to end up with a very partisan government level there, Met Council. You know that although Senator Wieger did not have them designated as partisan on the ballot, you know that when you have elected positions that are that large, that there is going to have to be party involvement to support those candidates, and there will be endorsements, and it will become even more partisan. Right now, the governor uses the open appointment process. He brings in candidates that are reviewed and interviewed, and then he makes recommendations to us, the Senate, and asks us to confirm those. And so we do have quite a bit of say. There's quite a bit of quite a few elected officials who currently have oversight, and we are representing the people now. The Met Council is really set up to administer our policies and taxation decisions. They deal with regional planning. They assist the local units of government reviewing their local plans for their comprehensive plans. They run our transit operations, and they take care of our wastewater treatment operations. They administer those programs. They don't have to be elected to administer those programs. And my big concern is that we need a council that is not going to be highly parochial, looking out for their district, but looking out for a regional system, looking out for a system that will look at the whole region for wastewater treatment and transportation, and not mainly being concerned about just ours. There's also an extra cost in electing the council. Senator Wieger mentioned that they would get public financing, and they would also, for their campaigns, to get public financing. There's a provision in here that raises their pay from $20,000 to $40,000 a year. I don't know who's going to fund the extra administrative costs. If we would have a regional administration levy that we would put on the Met Council, I doubt that everyone in the state would want to help pay for that. And so it would probably go on the levy for the metropolitan area. But my biggest concern is making this more partisan and bringing more politics into it. And I think that currently we have a council that is working very well with our local units of government. And a big concern of mine is that if they become elected, they may not defer in some cases. Or I'm thinking that they may be concerned that because they're elected by a much larger group than a single city council, that they may not listen as well to some of our other local officials. And so I'm trying to keep this working well. I think we finally have a council that's working well, and I hate to change it right now.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would Senator Wieger yield for a question?
Senator Wieger will yield. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Wieger, You and I have talked about this bill, and I don't support it, but I have a question. In your presentation of the bill to the body today, you did state that you were not dissatisfied with the current Met Council, with what they're doing, with the chair of the Met Council. You're not dissatisfied. Senator Wieger, what is the problem that you're trying to solve? If you're not dissatisfied and things seem to be going along fine, what is the problem that you're trying to solve with this bill?
Senator Wieger.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gerlach, the problem is that the council is not directly accountable to the people, and that is the bottom line. The council chair, who I mentioned, I'm not criticizing his actions. I'm not criticizing a particular action of the council. I mentioned before I did serve as a member. But I believe the process is too partisan right now. I believe the public, and I have held this belief for 30 years, that it is the public that should elect the council, and it shouldn't be based on whether there's a satisfaction at the moment, whether we suspend discussion on this. The process, though, I want to point out there was a concern that it would become partisan. Members, just on March 7, a press release issued by the governor announcing a new appointment process. I believe there are 7 or 8 people on there, and at least six people on the selection committee are not Democrats, possibly 7. Fine. Let that group decide who's the best person. That's how it works. And I'll tell you again, when Governor Perpich appointed me, a lot of good Republicans got replaced. It had nothing to do with the merits. It had more to do with what your political party was. In fact, I think the only Republican remaining when I was appointed was Dirk DeVries. I hope he's doing well because he did a great job. And Pat Hasselmoe. But otherwise, a lot of good people were replaced. I don't like that process, and I feel, and this is a philosophical issue, Senator Gerlach, that the public should select their representative from their district. You could make the same argument for county commissioners. They have districts. We create local governmental entities, as you know. Would we ever think of not having school boards elected, townships, city councils? In fact, there's park board, I believe, is elected in Hennepin. It's a philosophical issue that I've long held, regardless of who the governor is that power should go to the people in electing their representative.
Senator Gerlach. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it sounds like, Senator Wieger, that the first point that came out was direct accountability. I would contend that we have a lot of boards, commissions, all sorts of things that don't have direct accountability. Clearly, a case could be made that the Board of Regents for the University of Minnesota, that selection process is highly politicized. There's not direct accountability there by any means, and it's highly partisan. But we do that, and there's a lot of those types of things that certainly rise to a larger problem to fix than this. When we, I think, pretty much around the board agree that we're pretty satisfied with what's happening. Well, there's a couple of other points that were mentioned. Senator Roebling brought up the salaries. Senator Wieger, in this bill, you're doubling the salaries for a job that isn't changing. The only difference would be that they would stand for election. And it appears to me that as a prize for going through that electoral process, we're going to double their salary from $20,000 a year now for a very part-time job to $40,000 a year. I'm wondering why we are doubling their salaries. What is the cost to that, and what are we getting better government for that? I don't know about that. The cost of the elections themselves. They would have access under this bill to the public financing system. That's going to be the public financing itself is going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's going to be Access to the political contribution refund program that statewide or people that statewide candidates have that we have. I mean, I'm not sure I want to necessarily say that we're better or more deserving of that, but the fact is we're expanding this now to taxpayer subsidized Met Council elections. There's an enormous cost. It can add up to the testimony we had in the committee from someone from one of the staff people at the Met Council that it could be upwards of $2 million a year when you add in all of the costs for elections, salaries, staff, etc. And again, this is all to go after a problem that I don't think really exists. We're satisfied. Let's save this money. Let's put it into some other real needs and go from there and leave the system how it is. And when a real problem arises, then we ought to address this issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further, it's Senator Wicker.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gerlach, as I said in my initial comments, the Metropolitan Council is a very powerful, if not the most powerful unit of government in Minnesota. It is a taxing jurisdiction, I believe $67 million or more in property tax levy on the cost of getting elected. That is the price of being in a democracy that we have an election. We would not have the refund program. I think you put that on the record again. It would not be a refund program.
Senator Michel.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members, and my friend and colleague, Senator Wicker. I respectfully disagree. I wanted to remark, you talked about power to the people. My fear, members, is that this is actually power to the parochial. Power to the parochial. You know, some ideas get better with time. Some things get better as they get older. I can think of some wine that gets a little better. But this bill has not gotten better. Members, it has not gotten better over the last 10 years. And 10 years ago, Governor Carlson vetoed this idea. And I have asked that veto message, asked for it to be distributed. I hope it's on your desk. I'd ask you to look at that and review it. And to just highlight that Governor Carlson 10 years ago talked about his concern that an elected council would force council members to be parochial to their own constituencies and individual districts, which already have elected representatives in local governments. They already have elected representatives. That's us. That's us right here. So, Mr. President, I think what we could probably do is just scratch off 1997 and put the year 2007 on this, but I'm hoping this doesn't get as far as the governor's desk. We should stop this bad idea today.
Senator Bonnef.
Mr. Chairman, I stand in opposition to this, and I too speak with respect to Senator Wicker. Senator Wicker is the chair of education policy, and I have great respect for Senator Wicker and agree on most issues, but in this case, I do strongly disagree with this bill. And I disagree with it on for many reasons. I work in the Transportation Committee with the Metropolitan Council, and one of the things that I've seen is that each of us sitting on that committee are looking out for the best interests of the districts we represent, as we should. And so we have put forth many proposals, in particular this session, to study many possible transit ways. And the important thing about that is that at the end of the day, which studies or which projects will go forward will be decided by an objective group. I am concerned that if we put this kind of power in an elected body, that the projects that will get done around this state will depend on who in that body happens to have a louder voice or a better ability to negotiate with one another. And I don't think that that is in the best interest of long-term state planning and community planning. In addition, I think the timing is absolutely horrible for this bill. And I think that it's bad because this is the year that we are going to put forward a comprehensive transportation funding project that hopefully we will actually pass. And in order for this to pass, we need the support and the goodwill of the Metropolitan Council. We are going to be putting forward provisions in the transportation bill that will most likely be vetoed, and that in order for us to have a transportation bill that goes forward, it will need strong bipartisan support, and it will need friends in all places. So I think that right now the Met Council is working hand-in-hand with us on the issues that we are confronting in the transportation arena, and that for us to take this kind of a move right at this time would be detrimental to the process of making sure that we, by session's end, have a strong transportation funding package. So for that reason as well, I oppose this legislation.
Further discussion, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Wigger, years ago I thought that perhaps an elected Met Council would be an appropriate way to go. Frankly, I was kind of annoyed at some of their decisions, and I wanted to make sure that the public had a say in what their decisions might be. Now, I've had the opportunity to study the Met Council for close to 20 years, and I'm beginning to get a little different perspective. Time sometimes does that. Some of the arguments that have been presented today certainly have reflected my ideas. The concept that this originally was planned as an urban planning entity to make sure that we had good, proper urban planning so that we didn't have some of the examples that you see in some of the other major metropolitan areas of the country. Take, for example, Dallas or Houston, where you have a 20-story skyscraper across the street from a townhouse development. Literally, that happens. And we certainly don't want to have our metropolitan area have that type of planning or lack of planning, and that the developers just control the price of the land and they put whatever they want on it kind of willy-nilly in fashion. However, one of the greatest concerns that I've had is whether or not we do know that there's taxation authority on the part of the Met Council. It's probably one of the strongest arguments for a representative style body. Certainly the concept of taxation without representation is well known in American history. However, we have an opportunity to change that. We have an opportunity to simply remove that authority from the Met Council. We don't usually do that. We don't talk about that, although we guard that authority jealously as a legislature. So, Mr. President, I have the A3 amendment that I'd like to present.
Secretary will report the Limmer A3 amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 81 as follows. Page 17, after line 4, insert section 30. This is the A-3 amendment.
Senator Limmer on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Wigger and members, the amendment coming up on your screen, and some papers are available, this simply would terminate the Met Council's authority to levy taxes. In replace of that, we as a legislature will go back to doing the responsibility that we currently have, that we will control and examine the taxing opportunities for the Metropolitan Council, or the area of the Metropolitan Council zone, the metropolitan area. And I'm presenting it in order to make sure that the number one concern of representation on this council is finally addressed. We should keep the taxing authority here. And it's a wide enough, large enough area. It probably takes up a little over half the population of the state of Minnesota anyway. So I'm putting this before you. I'm asking for a roll call vote, Mr. President, and gladly accept any questions you may have.
There will be a roll call. Senator Wigger, did you wish to? Oh, excuse me, three hands. Roll call, three hands. There will be a roll call. Senator Wigger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Limmer, I rise to oppose the amendment. As I said earlier, I'm not opposed to the Metropolitan Council and the powers that it currently has. The bill that needs to be passed is to provide authority from the public, so there's direct accountability from the public and the council member that they have. This would undermine the council at this point, and I would oppose it.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. If Senator Limmer would respond to a question. Senator Limmer, I'm just trying to understand your amendment. Would your amendment retain the bulk of Senator Wigger's bill so he would have an elected Met Council, however they would have no taxing authority? Is that correct?
Senator Limmer.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mr. President, I would then, of course, wonder, you know, how the if we retain the Met Council, all of its duties and responsibilities and its full authority, how they might pay for some of the items which we invest responsibility in them.
Senator Limmer.
Well, Mr. President, that's rather quite simple. Any appropriation they seek would have to come back to the Minnesota legislature.
Further discussion on the Limmer Amendment? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the Limmer Amendment. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 20 ayes and 42 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoff mentioned that there was some concern about the timing of this because of transportation issues. And I had the same concern and actually put in a question to the Central Corridor Project Manager from the Metropolitan Transit and received a letter back from him. I don't know if all members have had a chance to see it, but he did. He also addressed some concern about changing the Metropolitan Council's potential makeup through an election at a time when they are going before the FTA for approval for the Central Corridor. And he's been working with these projects for 22 years. He had a number of years' worth of experience in Washington and Virginia, and he also was here working on the Hiawatha project and North Star, and now he is going to help with the Central Corridor project. And as he noted, there are so many requests for money for these mass transit projects at the federal level, that they're always looking for any excuse not to continue funding them. And the concern about an area's support and commitment to a project is always a concern to them. And so it's just one more factor. I don't know that it would be a major factor, but concern about when this council would be changed over from appointed to elected, and the way that the federal government might look at that as not having the stability that we should have here in our metropolitan area to implement a major project like the Central Corridor. So it's another thing that we might want to look at. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to request a roll call vote on the bill.
Three hands for a roll call. There will be a roll call. Senator Wigger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Roebling, thank you very much for pointing out the potential concern for the Central Corridor. And I appreciate your support for that corridor and others. I want to share some good news. Congresswoman McCollum, and there's a letter that's been handed out, did a little research on the rumor that this bill might jeopardize Central Corridor. And I'll just refer to a sentence or two. In a letter, she states, "There is no validity to rumors that legislation requiring members of the Metropolitan Council to be elected would delay or jeopardize Minnesota transit projects, including Central Corridor Light Rail. My office has contacted the Federal Transit Administration, which dismisses these rumors and offers them no credibility, calling them purely a local matter. So there's nothing to fear but fear itself."
Further discussion, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, it's interesting that that we now see that, you know, this seems to have come down to a partisan difference, although it seems like the opposition is bipartisan as well. But I think, you know, the interests that we have in mind are very similar, and I actually agree with some of the opposition statements that we're looking out for the interests of the region as a whole. And we're looking for a way to bring some focus and attention on the whole metropolitan region's needs and the priorities that are articulated by the public. This entity, the Metropolitan Council, is a governance structure, a governing unit that's very similar in its responsibility and its authority as a local unit of government. And I used to work for the City Council of the City of Minneapolis. I think a number of folks came out of local government. If anything we know is true about that level of government, there's a high level of scrutiny on the kinds of services that are provided by local units of government. People are very, very interested in those kinds of services that directly affect their quality of life, that impact the livability of their neighborhoods and the quality of their public works infrastructure, the quality of the things that make their daily activities more comfortable and more able to happen. And so that's how I come at this whole question. The Metropolitan Council, though it's a regional governance structure that serves, you know, 2+ million people, it amounts to the kind of government that provides local services. It provides local services in terms of wastewater treatment, provides transportation planning, land use planning, and transit operations. And folks are very, very aware of those things in their daily life and expect a high level of accountability. When I worked for a city council member, boy, when we had a neighborhood meeting on something that affected the neighborhood, we had droves of people turn out. And the fact that this body is two steps removed from that kind of accountability, plus has the ability to levy taxes, I think is a disconnect from the kind of authority and the kind of power that we've invested in it. Furthermore, the Metropolitan Council has virtual veto authority over our city councils and their land use plans and their wastewater plans and the like. Once again, begging, I think, for the kind of direct relationship and direct accountability to the population and to the region it serves. I think the argument about this being us getting too parochial or too partisan really loses the quality that we find in the context of public debate and policy debate and those kinds of things that occur in the context of campaigns and elections and the like. I think this is a good proposal. I think everyone's looking for some reform in the Metropolitan Council. They're looking for that kind of accountability, stronger relationships to local units of government, stronger relationships to the people it serves. This is about the best idea that's come along in a while, and it seems to be the kind of reform that's moving along in the process. So I think it's worthy of support. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out that the Metropolitan Council has multiple public hearings whenever they're proposing to make any changes in transit fares, significant route changes, adjust sewer rates, amend system plans, propose interceptor projects. They are holding public hearings out in the communities that are affected by these proposals. And I also wanted to address, although Senator Limmer's amendment did not pass, and I know people are concerned about them having taxing authority, out of their $665 million budget, most of the revenue comes from user charges and from our wastewater system, passenger fares from transit users, and state appropriation that the legislature must approve. And just 10% comes from local property taxes, and these are levied under a statutory ceiling established by us, the legislature. So they are limited in their taxing authority by the legislature, and I think that's very significant and important to remember in this debate.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I think a really simple way to explain why this bill is important is a very fundamental principle upon which our country is based: no taxation without representation. And that's what we're talking about. Senator Limmer wanted to have representation without taxation, but that's we've rejected that idea. You know, remember the colonists didn't like King George just telling them what to do without a right to vote. It's fundamental to democracy. We don't want to have a metropolitan Tea Party. We want to be able to vote for those who represent us and raise our taxes. And that's what accountability and democracy is all about.
Okay, further discussion, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just remembered something I was going to say when I stood up earlier. I just wanted to respond. You know how it is. I just wanted to respond to the to the concern that's been articulated about the interruption of the Central Corridor. Even if people were making noises like that, if you agree that there needs to be some sort of change to the metropolitan governance structure and its accountability, hopefully we will always be at some point in the middle of some process. So, you can raise that concern at any time. And so to allow specific circumstances, even to allow specific people who are in place to guide those sorts of overarching policy changes that future generations would have to accept, that would be not a great factor to take into consideration. But I also want to point out that even under the current arrangement we have, we always have varying sensibilities with respect to specifically transit and whether or not that's desirable. Our own governor has had an evolution on how he's thought about transit and specific transit facilities, and that's always going to be the case. And our governor, governors come, governors go, they have different views, they have different perspectives, they have statewide perspectives, or they have more parochial perspectives, they think, this idea is better than that idea, and they're responsible for appointing all 17 members of this council. So to take that argument out to its logical conclusion, we will always be in a circumstance where policy and political priorities are going to change, and so we can't be constrained by raising those kinds of arguments. The FTA, if they were going to worry about these sorts of local debates all the time, everywhere, or the Highway Administration, for that matter, would never let a single dollar come to the states.
Further discussion on the bill, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. It makes my day to hear somebody in this chamber say no taxation without representation. And it didn't even come from the Republican side. I just have to say that makes my day. But I sure hope that members who are going to be concerned about that principle today will also be concerned about that principle when we have a vote on the metropolitan area sales tax increase for transit in the 7-county metro area without a referendum. And I hope they'll take that principle to heart when those issues come back over and over and over again in the coming days.
Further discussion, and we're about ready for a vote. Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman,
Chairman,
and
fine.
Senator Ortman, I'm glad we agree that it's a really important principle, and that's great, but I have to say that when it comes to a metropolitan sales tax, number one, we are elected by a vote of the people, and number two, the voters would have to also pass that sales tax. Oh, they wouldn't. Well, we're elected by a democratic process, just like we're asking the Met Council to be elected. So that's the difference. We're not appointed officials who'd be passing that tax. We are elected and accountable to our constituents.
And the Secretary will take the roll on the bill.
This is on the recommendation to pass.
On the recommendation to pass. You should be voting if you're in the chambers. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. In 26 ayes and 36 nays, the motion does not prevail. I think Senator Saxog. Senate File 470. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when the committee do arise, Senate File 470 be recommended to pass.
All right. Explanation of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 470 is a bill that makes changes in existing law in regards to a commodities corridor, which was established between Grand Rapids, home of the Blandon Paper Company and the largest employer in Itasca County, and the Port of Duluth.
for the most part along U.S. Highway 2, a super two-lane highway. This legislation was approved by the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and I thank the Transportation Committee for their support in sending the bill to the floor. The bill has three sections that I'll briefly discuss. Section 1 of the bill deals with the route of the Commodities Corridor. When this law went into effect in 2005, the section we are adding was not approved. The City of Duluth approved it in the summer of 2005, and we wanted to put it into this existing law. It is the section of Trunk Highway 174 between U.S. Highway 2 and U.S. Highway 53. We are simply clarifying that in statute. Section 2 of the bill allows for 97,000-pound 7-axle vehicles to be used along the corridor. This vehicle will be specially permitted by MnDOT. The trucks are the same length and width, have extra braking power per pound, and will reduce wear and tear on our roads since we'll distribute the weight more evenly over 7 axles instead of 6. Section 3 of the bill will remove the requirement for construction permits for a new paper machine in Grand Rapids from the effective date. When this law was passed, it was hoped that we would have the air, water, and discharge permits, but we continue to work with the state to acquire them. Right now, Blandin Paper, the largest producer of lightweight groundwood coated paper in the Western Hemisphere, is dealing with a captive rail situation. To be competitive in a world market, they need to truck paper. In 2006, 1,400 loads were transported to Duluth along this route. This will allow Blandin to become more competitive in the global economy. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate member support. We'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 470. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Saxog that Senate File 470 be recommended to pass. Excuse me. Before that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, Senator Foley.
I would like to ask the author some questions regarding the vehicle. Will he yield?
Be happy to answer questions, Senator Foley.
what I'm looking for is that the highway rate restrictions are based on damage to roads, and tell me how this bill will treat the roads in that area.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Saxog.
Senator Foley, first of all, because there are more axles for the weight load, there will be less weight per axle on the road, resulting in less wear and tear on the road. The trucks will not be over any weight restrictions, and in terms of when weight restrictions go on, they will be followed just as any other truck would.
Senator Saxe, but why do you need a permit if they meet the requirements?
Because they're heavier trucks. They're right now, the trucks that will be going are going on the commodities corridor, and there were 1,400 loads on the commodity corridor last year. Were standard truckloads, and these will be heavier truckloads, but there'll be less weight per axle because there's more axles.
Thank you, Senator Sachs. I'm really concerned about this type of an approach because what it does is set forth for a certain group to go around the law, and if those vehicles don't damage the highway, why they should allow any truck that was in within those weight parameters, not single out some specific organization. Is Blandin Paper going to do the repair when the roads fail?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Foley, the Minnesota Department of Transportation does not believe that the roads will fail, and indeed feels that these trucks, which are specially permitted and specially made for this situation, will again cause less wear and tear on this road.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog.
Senator Saxhog, any further discussion? If seeing none, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Saxhog that Senate File 470 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next bill on the Senate General Orders calendar will be Senate File 538, Senator Kubley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 538 be recommended to pass.
Senator Kubley, explanation.
Well, Senate File 538, members, is a bill that looks at geothermal being considered as an option when the state is facing the replacement of a boiler or an air conditioning system for one of its state buildings. It does, members are getting a handout on this now that gives you a couple of examples of communities that have done this and have saved considerable money. I think it could really lower the cost of delivering government services for a long period of time. I've suggested in another bill that we might create a loan fund to help even local units of government do this and just have them pay us back out of their energy savings on a month-to-month basis, and we could still, reduce the cost of delivering local government services in the same way. You'll notice that on the one for the city of Appleton, where Appleton converted their civic center, they're saying that they saved over $9,000 in heating and cooling costs in the first 8 months of operation. Most of the places that put these systems in pay for the systems with their energy savings in a period of less than 6 years. So it's a fairly significant savings, and the lifespan of the system is thought to be about 30 years today with today's technology. So, it seems to me that you've got another 20 to 25 years where you're going to have significantly lower energy bills for the duration of that infrastructure's lifespan. On the other side of that page, you'll notice another city building with the city of Corcoran. They're saying that they save about $1,800 a year in savings costs. That's probably a lower amount than most public buildings would save, but still a fairly significant savings if you're looking at another $150 a month. So, from my point of view, members, it would seem to me that passing this amendment is simply asking that when the opportunity arises and you need replacement of those fairly expensive systems of heating and cooling anyway, that we go ahead and consider these renewable sources as a cheaper option for conducting the government's business. I'd appreciate your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 538. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, would the author yield?
He will yield.
Senator Kubley, I just had a question. In tax committee, we've been hearing a lot of bills about sales tax exemptions for courthouses and other things. Would that qualify per this bill for state as state funding, in your opinion?
Well, Senator Cooper,
were they, of course, granted?
Well, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Senjum. I guess I'm not on the tax committee, but, I'm sure that, I don't know. I guess I certainly wouldn't object to that, but it's not a part of this bill. But it does seem to me the savings are significant enough that with or without it, it's going to pay for itself over the long haul.
Further discussion on Senate File 538. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Kubley that Senate File 538 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. One more. Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate file 1168 be recommended to pass.
Senator Sparks, on discussion on Senate file 1168.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is about consumer protection. Minnesota state law obligates a biller to carry a commercial general liability policy. This coverage used to include completed operation coverage, which meant a builder finished a home that in secondary coverage was under that policy. Over the years, completed operations coverage has been excluded from the commercial general liability policy, and therefore the builders have been left with no coverage for secondary damage to homeowners' property. This bill simply requires the policy to have the completed operator coverage. It's, again, members, a consumer protection bill, and I would urge member support.
Senator Neville, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, would Senator Sparks yield to a question?
Senator Sparks will yield. Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sparks, is this just general liability coverage, or does this cover warranty-related issues, for example, the new housing warranty liabilities or the contractor warranties for remodeling that are under Chapter 327A?
Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and Senator Neville, I believe this is just related to general liability insurance.
Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 1168. The question occurs on the motion of Senator Sparks that Senate File 1168 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator.
Come to order.
Senate's in order.
Mr. President, I move the report of the committee of the whole, as kept by the Secretary, be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Without objection, we'll revert to the fifth order of business and take up under motions the addendum. Senator Pogemiller, the reports of committees. We're on the addendum now.
Mr. President, I move that the addendum committee reports printed in the committee reports printed in the addendum be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business on the addendum will be second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's addendum. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Continuing on motions, there's a motion to be read at the desk.
Senator Hand moves that Senate File 1814 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to the Committee on Education.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is just a bill that was introduced and referred to Senator Cohen's committee. I've talked to both Senator Cohen and Senator Wieger, and they are agreeable to have it moved to Senator Wieger's committee so that it can be heard on Monday.
Okay. Discussion on the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business is bill introduction, Senate bill introductions. There's two to be read at the desk.
Senators Vickerman, Kubley, Scogin, Dill, and Coring introduce Senate File 1925, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for agricultural, veterans, and military affairs purposes.
Be referred to the Finance Committee.
Senators Neville, Hand, Michelle, Olson, G, and Scheid introduce Senate File 1926, a bill for an act relating to education, permitting charter school students to participate in high school league activities in the resident school district.
Referred to the Education Committee. There are also two changes on the bill introductions. On page one, Senate File 1878 will be referred to the Environment and Natural Resources. And on page two, Senate File 1883 will be referred to the Judiciary Committee. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. We're next order of business is announcements of Senate interest. Without objection, Senator Pappas, Marty, Johnson, Wergen, all day. Dill at 11:35 on, Vanderveer from 11 to 11:40, and Michelle, Senator Michelle at 12:05 on. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, members, there will not be a floor session on Saturday. I don't know if there's any committee meetings, but there is not a floor session. People have been working hard. We're making progress. The Finance Committee is doing a fabulous job. There will be Saturday floor sessions, more than likely the next two Saturdays. So I move that the Senate adjourn till Monday, March 19th, 11 a.m.
On the motion to adjourn, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.